And I've now got, let's go to Brad on line three. Here we go. Brad, hello, Brad, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. You're a little bit faint, sorry.
Oh, really? I'm screaming into the microphone. So have you got a volume switch on your phone?
Oh, yeah, maybe it's down. Maybe that's what it is.
Oh, you just shout whatever you're going to say, and we'll, because even though it's us that's quiet for you, why don't you be as loud as you can for us? So
a good old fashioned shouting, mate.
Yeah, like you're in a foreign country. What do you want to say?
Tony Martin was saying earlier he doesn't know why people would read newspapers these days.
Yeah,
it's a valid point, but I just want to give you a tradie's perspective on that one.
Mm.
I know, like, I've been given a bit of stick over the years for pulling out the age on the job site, so I can't imagine what it would be like if I pulled out the laptop.
Right, so is that true? Because I know someone who works in a factory in Dandenong, and yeah, there's the same kind of mockery if the age comes out. If you pull out Epicure or something, yeah. Ooh, it's very...
What are you, mate? You're a bit of a toff, are you? That sort of thing.
You're a bit of a toff.
That is a very good point. The laptop hasn't quite got small enough. If it was Game & Watch sized...
Yeah, what if it was a Kindle? What if they... Because that's another thing they're talking about, the Kindle.
Or Pig Shooting Monthly or something like that, you know?
Pig Shooting... Well, obviously you could do that thing of just, you know, sometimes I know people who'll put a... you know, a fake book cover on what they're reading. So they might be reading, you know, Dan Brown, but it's, you know, Dostoevsky on the cover on the outside. So you could
dumbing things down a bit.
Yeah, you could put Pig Shooting Monthly around, you know, the Financial Review, obviously.
You know, there are personals ads in Pig Shooting Monthly. I met someone who met their husband in a Pig Shooting magazine through a pen pal relationship that developed into true love. But we probably haven't got the full... You'd need an extra couple of hours to hear more on that. But thank you very much for calling. Is it Steve I'm speaking to, or have I... who's this whisper?
Brad's
Justin?
Still here.
Brad. Thank you, Brad.
Brad, sorry.
I was going to say, I know on site sheds, on building sites, there's just enough room for the Herald Sun on every table. And it's unheard of to bring out anything bigger as well.
Excellent. Well, we'll farewell you, Brad, for that. Thank you very much.
Thank you, gents.
And we're now speaking, I think, to Kathy. Is that Kathy?
Yeah, hi.
How are you?
I just sort of had a thought about having to pay for stuff on the internet. And I think if you don't pay for a newspaper that's only available on the internet, then there's no revenue for the paper, and therefore you get a poorer quality product.
Well, that's right. And I mean, you know, you read people saying, oh, blogging is replacing journalism, but, you know, blogging mostly consists of rehashing what journalists have got to say.
Yeah.
Quite.
Right.
That was all I wanted to say.
No, we're going in... No one's saying we're not going into a dark era, which is why having the play Optimism featured earlier in the show was just an ironic swipe on our behalf. I think we've only got a generation or two left as a species.
Yay!
And you are listening to Triple R FM 102.7. It's a 10:45.
Going down
Thank
the tubes.
You,
there you
Kathy.
Go. We've just lost another human.
Hello. Who have I got there on line nine?
This is Oscar.
Hey, Oscar. How are you going?
Yeah, good, thanks. Great. Really enjoying the two tones.
Oh, thank you very much. You're on the blower, so what is your issue?
Are you guys talking about the internet news stuff because of that Media Watch show last night?
I didn't watch it, but I heard it was pretty good.
Fucking hilarious.
Yeah, yeah, really?
Yeah.
Just watching Laws and all the others have their right of reply.
Yeah.
And going, we do something constructive, and they're just very destructive people at Media Watch. And,
something constructive. I mean, I think anyone who's read Jonestown might dispute that.
Well, they've constructed a reasonably good bank balance is mainly what they've done, isn't it?
Yes. So it was a lot of, you know, I didn't expect a lot of belly laughs, but they were there to be had.
And did they play the John Safran footage from...
Yeah, that was great to finally see on real TV.
A lot of people probably... Well, if you missed it a few years ago on Media Watch, it was its only ever airing of the Ray Martin outside the house, wind blew his rubbish sketch from John.
I was very disappointed, though, in when I saw it on a mate's video. It was Ray Martin's wife that took the cake when she said, "Do you know who we know?"
Do you know who we know?
And started threatening them sort of mafia style.
Zero, zero.
Yeah, that was amazing, wasn't it?
And
of course, John in the papers on Good Friday with popping a couple of nails through his hands in a Philippines, well, the Good Friday crucifixion rituals.
Do we know yet whether that's for real?
Yeah, he did that. Yeah, I haven't spoken to him yet, but he he's recovering well, everyone.
He's going the extra yards for comedy.
Yeah.
And he's got, and what I was reading is not just through the hands, through the feet as well. See, I would have thought maybe just the just do the hands if this has to happen. But I mean, you look at the photo, and I mean, I don't know anything about crucifixion, but there's no blood coming out. Wouldn't there be a lot of blood coming out of your hand if you had a nail through it? I mean, I'm not saying there would be, but...
Oh, I just know he really had it happen.
He really did have it happen.
I know that, like, the true professional he is, he's mainly interested in the fact they made him wear a wig. If you're involved in it, everyone wears a particular headdress.
Right.
And artistically, I don't think the headdress is what John wanted, and so he's mainly...
He wanted a beehive, didn't he?
He isn't concerned about the fact he was crucified. He's concerned about how it will look in the show. Later on. So if we're a proper shock talk back, we should say, is it right that people should be doing crucifixion rituals?
Is it a good example to the young folk?
Yes.
What do you think?
If you call up with that, then have something else to say as well. Let's go to the line one and then we'll go to a track. So who are we speaking to on line one? Hello?
It's today's mystery caller.
Hello, on line two.
Yeah, how you going, Tony?
Hello.
Who is that?
Jamie's my name.
Oh, hello, Jamie.
From Far East Gippsland. I used to ring Bigsy quite a bit over the years and give updates about what's happening with the logging in the forest out here. So I've given you a call now.
And how are things going? Is it reasonably bad?
I guess it's, you know, the industry's in its death throes and they're just picking off the last great iconic areas that were promised for protection many, many years ago. And just like what's happening in Tasmania as well. You know, the governments talk about climate change and water and all these issues, and yet they still go out and knock down, you know, prehistoric forests. It's crazy.
And how are the people up the trees? How are they faring?
Yeah, well, it's a courageous effort to go up a tree and sit out there, and especially as the weather's getting colder and being a tree when machines are hitting the trees on purpose and shaking them, and these crew out there are really risking their lives, and often the true story doesn't get told, you know, in the corporate media there, and I've just... For months and months and months, there's been a mob out there, out here, and they're gutsy, and they're just camping at a campground when they're not in the forest, and they're, you know, they're real heroes of this age.
And do they stay up there 24/7, or is there a shift system?
Oh yeah, look, it varies, I suppose. Just depends on what's going on, but yeah, you know, people are prepared to sit out up in the trees for as long as it takes, and these days search and rescue are pretty good. They get them down, you know, pretty quick. I guess it's pretty hard to hold them off too long, and if the story doesn't get out into the media, it's, you know, sort of pointless in a lot of ways, because it just aggravates the workers, which is not the goal.
And what's the when you say the industry's in its death throes, what do you think the next couple of years hold? Is this state government looking like they're making any steps towards dismantling the timber industry, or do you think it's in its death throes because there'll be no forest?
Well, they've overcut, and that's all come out in the sustainable yield figures, Tony, and that's pretty well known. And the last state election, they promised to save X amount of 1,000 hectares of forest, and, you know, that's taking forever. Goolongook is still unprotected, even though that was promised years and years and years ago, and that was a 10-year campaign, hundreds and hundreds of arrests. So, you know, the workers are the meat and the sandwich, and it's just been badly managed by Vic Forrest and the DEC, and continues to be badly managed, and the majority is wood chipped and sent to Japan, and, you know, that's really not good for the environment, good for economics, and good for jobs or anything.
Well, it's good to get an update from you, Janie, good to hear from you, and keep going out there.
There's just one other little thing. I got an email from a group called Saving Old Growth, and there's a rally this coming Wednesday, the 13th of May, 3 p.m. at Federation Square. I think it's pretty quickly organised, and just a bit of a march about the Florentine in Tasmania, and also out here in Far East Gippsland, Bunjiwa, and there's other great iconic areas. And this guy's address is savingoldgrowth@gmail.com if people want more information.
And if they want to pop down to Fed Square, it's Wednesday. Which Wednesday?
This coming Wednesday.
Coming Wednesday.
13th at 3 p.m. And also we've got a website out here, gecko.org.au. And we've been going for 15 years, going strong.
Oh, well, that's all good stuff. And hello to anyone listening up a tree this morning.
Good on you, Tony.
Thanks. We're just going to move a couple of the sponsorship announcements through, and then we're not going to go to a track because we do have a couple waiting on hold. But then after we've spoken to these two, we will go to a track, and then we'll have more callers after that. So those two people, hang on. I just need to get through a couple of these, or we're not going to get through them in the hour.
Done.
They are, and you are listening to On The Blower with Tony and Tony, filling in for Tony Biggs on this Friday morning, and we are right in the middle of being On The Blower.
Yes.
And we've got lines 5 and 6 to come. I believe we've got Ian on line 5. Are you there, Ian? No? Still with us? No, we might have lost just those ads. He just wanted to put down his phone, listen to the ads properly, and I think Ian might call back later. Let's see if Kathy's still on line 6, or is it James? Hello? Hello?
Unbelievable. Obviously, these people are Ashvelters, and they're quickly accessing the Growling Frogs website. That's
or it
what
could
I'd
have
suggest.
Been that they rang up, because you know how I made a big deal, I wouldn't go to a track while there were people on hold. They could have been ringing up to tell me to go to a track.
Music buffs.
And so it worked out that if they hung up, I'd play a song. And the song I'm going to play actually is one that Tony Biggs introduced me to. You might say, oh, come on. This isn't very hard to come across because really the darkness were pretty big at the time.
Yeah, right.
But I always thought Friday morning, it does give you that feel of what's going to come up tonight.
Let's do it.
Yes, they are sponsors indeed. We only had one track in there, squeezed it in before the hour of 11 o'clock.
Hey,
it was Friday Night by Darkness from there. The Darkness, sorry, from an album a few years ago, Permission to Land, hardly need to tell you.
Has there ever been another one? Did The Darkness...
I don't know, haven't they sort of faded? They were probably the most ever costumed, I think Phoebe Squared identified this, but they were the most ever costume changes at the Corner Hotel.
Really?
Yeah, 3.
Wow, yeah, I don't think Nick Barker did
no,
any
he didn't,
costume
did he?
Changes. I'd just like to plug another show here on Triple R, if that's the done thing.
Oh,
that's
absolutely the done thing.
What about Lime Champions, which is 7 till 8, Monday night?
So it used to be the pinch time slot, and Lime Champions have taken over.
It's another comedy program. Justin Hazelwood, the bedroom philosopher, is on there. You've got, Josh Earle might be involved.
Yep.
A whole bunch of people doing some fine sketch work and written comedy right here on Triple R for free.
It's been a long time. Apart from Get This, probably over... It's between Martin Malloy... And now, there's probably only been Get This that's done written sketches, hasn't it?
Sketches, as long as I've been around, Tony, sketches have always been last year's news.
Yes.
In the 80s, I was told it's far too 70s to do sketch. In the 90s, no, it's so 80s. Now, then when we're doing Get This, it's so 90s to do sketch comedy. It's just because it's quite, you know, it's quite a lot of work involved for something that you might play once or twice. And very few people want to dive into the sketch comedy pool.
And we're actually talking with Frank Woodley earlier. He's got a play on at the Malt House called Optimism.
Mm.
And we were talking to Frank about how you can stumble across the same joke. And not that this is the same joke, but you actually thought that this show that you heard last week...
Lime Champions.
Followed
no.
found a thread on a joke you'd had a crack at in the late 80s or early 90s.
And they did it properly. We Tom Gleiser and myself did a sketch about on Eon FM, Tony, that's how long ago it was, where it was Cheech and Chong making the inevitable switch to heroin, and it was a trailer for their new film, Shooting Up.
Yeah.
And the people... And because I'd only seen... Nice Dreams. Remember Nice Dreams?
Yeah.
It's the one where it's ice creams and it's changed to Nice Dreams.
I've only seen one. It's the Corsican Brothers where they're born with beards.
That's their period one. But I had only seen that film, so I hadn't seen Up in Smoke, and I had forgotten about the album. So it was a very poor sketch, I have to say. Good idea, poor sketch. But the Lime Champions did basically a sort of smacky version of the Is Dave There?
Which is their most famous.
Yeah, that's right. And it was absolutely brilliant. So I'm recommending the Lime Champions 7 to 8
Monday evenings. That sounds terrific. And you also, in your travels, have stumbled across a bit of movie news, I believe.
This has hit the news today. There's a new version of the Dam Busters, the old Lancaster bomber well, dam-busting movie, World War II style. Peter Jackson is producing a new version with Sir David Frost. And Stephen Fry is writing the script. And one of the problems they've come across is that in the real true life story of the Dam Busters, the captain of the plane had a dog. I'm not sure if the dog was on the plane with him. It must have been, I guess, because it's such an important part of the story. And, of course, the dog's name was the N-word.
Oh, was it?
It was the N-word. And so when this is shown on television, the old Dam Busters, apparently in England, it's all chopped out, all of the references to the dog's name. But in America, when they show it, the dog's name is dubbed as Trigger.
Yeah.
But so they're going, well, this is going to be the most authentic Dam Busters movie ever. How are we going to, can we have, are we just going to call the dog the N-word? Or, and Sir David Frost, apparently Stephen Fry has come up with some alternative names for the dog, but Sir David Frost is going with Niggsy. Because apparently the captain would occasionally shorten the dog's name to Niggsy. Hey, he's Niggsy.
Staying true to life.
Somehow that sounds more offensive to me. So I don't know what they're going to do there. Trigger, I didn't realise.
There was a drama here in Australia on a similar topic. Was it someone, Nugget Coombs, was it? There was a stand. So a listener would be able to tell the facts of this story, which I'm going to fire around with a machine gun and hit the odd bit. But there's a grandstand that's a famous heritage grandstand that's called the either the Nugget or Nigger Coombs or something. I think it was Nugget Coombs, wasn't it? There's the famous politician or political advisor or businessman in the 50s and 60s here in Australia. Right. I think he's a great inspiration for Peter Garrett.
Well,
Is
Nugget a racist appellation? No, I didn't realise that.
It is a...
It certainly makes that film, The Nugget, a worry.
No, it's not Nugget. It must be something else that is more... offensive than that.
I didn't know we had the N-word Coon, stand.
Maybe it's Coon that was taken out.
Possibly.
Anyway, there's a stand that is in a great threat of being renamed and with its racist moniker taken off it.
Okay.
And the locals won't have it. They love their racist stand. And so that's the last time I've sort of heard... just the out-of-datedness of words troubling.
Well, it's very hard,
generation.
Really, to offend people these days. I mean, each generation is harder to offend than the one before, but the N-word still has the power to do this. Do you think we should get people to call in with things they've seen that have offended them lately?
Yes.
What's out there?
Absolutely. I've read a book. In fact, we also last time just degenerated into First Tuesday Book Club with people just ringing in with what they're reading. But I read a book that actually did trouble me about things that do offend me in society.
Mm.
And that was Ariel Levy's Female Chauvinist Pigs. Have you read that?
I haven't read that, no.
You should read more feminist literature.
I'll have a crack at anything.
Well, this book is about raunch culture and whether or not... whether or not we live in a society that has kind of lost the plot in terms of the using sex, particular women kind of proudly using sex, she cited examples like Girls Gone Wild was a series in the States where basically women just lifted their shirts for the pleasure of the film crew and the surrounding gang of men.
Yes.
And it kind of creates that mood and seems as though for the generation coming up that that's the acceptable way, and it's sold off by, Ariel Levy argues that it's sold off by the feminist movement as women empowered.
That's
right. Women are now safe to do this because they've entered into that. Men have been flashing their balls for years, to be honest, and now we've entered into this comfortable situation where both of us are able to, all sexes are able to express themselves.
It's
properly.
That, it's the argument that the Pussycat Dolls is empowering, and it's taking control of the sexual image.
And Ariel Levy kind of stood up and just writes for really brilliantly over these 200 pages on just what shit this is. That really, it's where did feminism lose the way?
It's the editor of Ralph magazine going, yeah, whatever. Yeah, sure, empowering, fine, go with that.
Because it's a great era, really, for men in daggy, baggy jumpers staring at women in quite tight spandex. So
it's probably the greatest era of all for that. So.
Yeah, and that's what this book says. So that's the book I've been reading, and it might be that some of the things she talked about did ring true in terms of what offends me in society, the way that that maybe, and I never realised I was this puritanical, and we didn't get Ariel Levy on the Breakfasters because I thought you're going to give me Muslim fundamentalist Mormon talk, aren't you, about society being too rude.
Right.
But then if I had read the book,
yeah,
I would have gone, God, we should have got this woman on. And if I had have got to the back cover and seen how hot she was, is that? Oh my God! Have I just actually ended my critique of a feminist text with
you mentioned recently. What is the Larry Sanders Show?
Yeah.
How great is that scene where Gloria Steinem, playing herself,
yeah,
meets Hank Kingsley?
Yeah.
And he gives her his theory on feminism, and then as she's walking off, he goes, "Great ass."
Just what a character!
And she agreed to be in that scene. I love that.
So, what has offended you? Call in with that.
Mm.
Just what you're reading.
Interesting things that are not you know, generic, you know, Rupert Murdoch's ethos. Not something big like that. Something small and specific, like this damn Buster's dog name gear.
Yeah, excellent. Well, let's go to Keith, who may or may not want to talk about that, but he is in the kitchen. Keith, in the kitchen, are you there?
I'm here. Well, I'm not in the kitchen now. I've come out away from the radio.
We take a while to get to things. So, Keith, what do you want to talk about?
What grinds my gears? I'm a cook. I run a kitchen, I guess. Let me redefine that. I'm a chef.
Oh, yes.
Because I run a kitchen. And the terminology is what gets up my goat, apart from the stuffing. Guys, especially young guys, and specifically guys, I think girls are kind of over it, but they come out of trade school and they know how to wash their hands, they know how cold the fridge should be to keep chickens in, and they call themselves chefs.
So,
I'll be at the back with the chefs. I think the only place you can actually find chefs, plural, is at a conference. Because chef translates literally to chief.
So you're saying that the title chef is just being distributed a bit too freely these days?
Oh, they're being a little bit, liberal with that, I think.
And you're offended?
Oh, certainly am. I'm a tradesman of many years. And that, I think it undermines the credibility of chef. He won't even talk about that ridiculous program on television at the moment. What's that thing called? It's
Ready, Chef. Steady, Cook.
The Master Chef and the Cook?
No.
Cook, yeah, I think that's what it is.
I know it belongs to the general genre of television shows, the one you're referring to, where normal people are made fun of by a panel of experts, and the normal person leaves the set broken-hearted and empty-handed, with
that's
one
right.
person surviving to be broken-hearted and empty-handed next week.
Yeah,
fabulous. Yeah,
that's a full genre of show. Keith, thank you for your
Master
thoughts
Chef
on that.
Master Chef is the show.
Master Chef, that's the one. Yes.
Thank you.
And just quickly, Keith, though, what skill should people be able to demonstrate in order to be allowed to call themselves a chef? What is the skill that separates the men from the boys in that regard?
To be able to run a kitchen.
To be able to run a kitchen. Okay.
Anyone else below that is a chef, is a cook.
That's
right. In a kitchen, you have a chef who's the chief. He's the guy in charge, and he can do everything. He can cook. He can wash dishes. He can order. He can relate to staff. He can relate to management. Does the whole gamut. Write menus. Rework recipes. A cook is anybody below him. Most of the people coming out of trade school these days are glorified kitchen hands.
Well, there you go. Glorified. Let's have a show called Glorified Kitchen Hand on Channel 10 every night.
Keith, good to hear from you, Keith. We're now going to hear from Reg. Reg, are you there?
Yeah, how you going, Tony?
Good. You?
Good. In regards to the N-word, a fair few years back I was down in Geelong and there was a reconciliation march along the foreshore around to a place called Osborne House, which is an hysterical Navy bullshit thing.
Yeah.
And there was a welcoming by the Wathaurong clan in a traditional way, the dance and all that sort of stuff. And one of the guys who was one of the organisers, an older Anglo bloke, got up and he was making a speech. And in amongst his speech, he said, "I'd like to thank everyone today who helped out, and we all work like niggers."
Oh, there you go.
Good. Solid.
That would have gone down.
Well, can I share with you my favourite funeral anecdote, which involved my nana, step grandmother. We weren't very close to her, and she was herself quite racist in life.
Yeah.
And my dad went up there to Yarrawonga for her funeral, and the priest said, "Joy always stood upright like a good Christian woman, not bent over like some Hindu."
Oh, there you go.
Just cranked that out. And Dad just said it just into the hand, couldn't stop laughing. "Not bent over like some Hindu, my God." They carry their washing on their heads, Tony. Oh, they're upright.
No, pretty much once you get north of the age of 70 in my family tree, it's just nothing but racism.
Yeah. Good fun.
Yeah, it's all part of the fun.
For fans of racism, do read Tony's book coming out in October, Nest of Occasionals, which I believe has a full chapter.
There's a fair bit of racism in my book. Not condoning racism.
No.
Reporting on it. Reporting on it.
Thank you very much, Reg.
Thank you.
We've got line five and John. Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
Oh, I was just ringing because you mentioned the ES N-word brown stand.
Yeah, what was that stand? I can't remember.
It was a stand in a football field in Toowoomba.
Right.
And it was named after a 1921 Kangaroos rugby league legend, ES Nigger Brown.
Right.
And
who was not brown.
Okay. So he was actually named Nigger. I've just got this note from Rachel out by the phones who says that he was named Nigger because he was so pale.
So okay. It was a bit of irony there.
Yeah, it was a bluey for the redhead sort of thing.
Yeah, because he's... last name was Brown. Yeah.
Well, I'm glad we've sorted that out. But I mean, you know, it's only, you know, it's. I was trying to explain to a young person recently, Tony, that when I was a kid, the most popular show on New Zealand television was a show called The Black and White Minstrel Show. And it's really hard to imagine what that show was to someone who has never seen it. And if you go to YouTube and type in Black and White Minstrel Show and have a look, it's so bizarre. It's like there's a whole lot of people in like tuxedos, and like there's a 70s, like this show went right up to about 1977, so they're doing disco numbers. They're doing huge disco numbers in blackface. And it's like, it's so bizarre. It's like you're watching something from David Lynch's Inland Empire.
And in fact, you told me one of the great facts about that show is that Lenny Henry.
I don't think this is an urban myth. He was in the show. I'm not sure if he was just a guest comic on the show, but the story that you always hear is that he would have to white up and then over the top of the whiting up, black up in order to get the look of the Black and White Minstrel Show.
That's the sort of thing where you write it in a novel and the editor says you probably have to take that out. Believable enough. So I wonder if that's true, and if you can confirm that, that would be helpful. Mm. Line one, we've got Sid. Sid, how are you? Sid, have another go. Sorry.
Hello?
Oh, we're very good. Both of us are great.
You are on the...
What that last bloke said about the rugby league stadium.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just knew about that. But I also grew up in New Zealand with the Black and White Minstrels.
Yeah. How bizarre was it?
Yeah.
I mean, Sunday night, the every family would crowd around the television to watch people
like the Muppets
in tuxedos and blackface singing songs from the charts. So you just have a row of people on a giant staircase going, SDU, Mrs. Robinson. You know, just songs that have nothing to do with the minstrel arts.
Yeah, but, you know, we're all politically correct now, so now it's racism and stuff like that.
Well, it's more just bizarre than racist. I mean, you look at it and it's just, you're going, you really used to watch this? It's very odd.
It is very
odd. We used to call the traffic cops the Black and White Minstrels. In those days, they were black and white. Anyway, they had to be there.
And Sid, I believe that stand is being knocked down. Is that right? I've also got a note from Rachel saying that the Nigger Brown stand is being knocked down.
I don't know whether it's been knocked down I think they're building a new one. And they don't want to use his name. Well, but they don't want to put the nigger in it.
Right, right.
It's something like that. Yeah.
Right. Well, we'll follow that story.
And can I ask, are there any? You're living in Australia, sir.
Yes.
Is there a New Zealand phrase that you've tried to introduce into the Australian lexicon while you've been here?
Oh shit! There's lots of them that they don't get.
Up the boo eye. Have you tried up the boo eye? People are very confused by up the boo eye over here.
Up the boo eye.
What's that mean?
It just means you're in a lot of trouble. You're up the boo eye.
Really?
Yeah, that might be a North Island one.
Don't you not say move, you say shift.
As in back and cribs and stuff like that.
Oh, okay, right. That's more modern. Yeah, right.
No. You know, they call them batches in the North Island.
Oh, your batch is a beach house.
And
I'm off to the batch.
Crib in the South Island.
Oh, crib, is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, your little holiday house.
We're not listening to you guys till you get some sort of consensus.
Yeah, we've got to go. We've got to go.
Excellent.
Well, cheers.
It's great to hear from you. We've got Karen on line three. Hello, Karen.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Have you been offended by something, Karen?
I'm offended by so many things. You have no idea. But you're talking about the newspapers.
Yeah.
And something that, and it sort of ties into whether you would buy newspapers as opposed to reading things online.
Mm.
Because I don't know if this is a crazy, outlandish thing to say, but I find The Age online way dumber.
Oh, is that right?
Than the newspaper. Well, yeah, I find it really trashy. And if you get the newspaper, you don't get sort of photo galleries of Victoria Beckham's boobs and stuff. You know, you just get news.
That's right. And I guess a lot of the opinion pieces and feature articles aren't on the online version, is that right?
Well, yeah, and also the online version just has, there's one in particular bugbear that I have, which I almost in a really sick, fascinated way, I get on The Age online every day to check it, to check how offensive it is that day. And it's because every day on the main page, the travel section down the bottom has a picture accompanying some stories. And it's not that unusual that the picture has nothing to do with the stories.
Right.
But the picture is nearly always a half-naked woman.
See,
yeah.
It just apropos of nothing, you know? And it's like, you know, go to Iceland and it's like a...
They've got hot springs.
I don't think anyone wants to see a gallery of Victoria Beckham's boobs.
Well, you know what I mean? It's like, it's just full of rubbish. You know, The Age online just seems a lot...
Oh, it's absolutely. You're not. It's not seem. It is. And you know, I know people that work there, and it is. There's a lot of pressure for it to be a huge site, and it is a huge site. I think it's bigger, much, much bigger than the Herald Sun site. And so they need to hold the. They have to have a bit of the Herald Sun feel there, and that first photo you see on the left-hand side is always a tabloid story.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and that's where your eye sort of goes to, and then it goes sort of down the side, you know, on the other side. But it's I just find it really. I mean, The Age, obviously, it's kind of boring to talk about how The Age has gone a bit down the drain in the last few years. But I feel like The Age online is just so sexist.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, I go to the Sydney Morning Herald, which is kind of pretty much the same, and. Mm. The main story the other day was Mel Gibson steps out with a hot Russian woman. And I'm sure that wouldn't have been the main story on the front of the Sydney Morning Herald that day in the paper.
That's right, because they can change it 20 times a day. And they can sort of, you know, they can trot out really bad stuff and then quickly pull it.
Right.
As well, you know, because it's online. So they can just put an enormous picture of, you know, someone falling over in a fashion show or something, you know, and then they can just pull it when they get wind that it's, you know, pissing everyone off.
But do you have both sides of it, that you are also attracted to tabloid like a lot of people are, that you hate it that this is where society's gone, but when you see the Mel Gibson story, you do check out the story?
Some things, I guess. I wouldn't be able to honestly say that I, you know, never read trashy rubbish, but I just feel like if I go to a site, like if I go to Go Fug Yourself, that is trashy rubbish and I know what I'm getting. And if I go to The Guardian, I want to read some news that's sort of European-based. And if I go to the, you know, you want to feel like they're not bleeding in together all the time.
Now, and there's a time and a place, and the time and place for that sort of rubbish is when you're in a long queue at the supermarket.
Yeah, yeah. Or at the dentist.
You're not paying for it.
And it should be 2 or 3 years old, I think, usually, to get the full impact for me. Hey, thank you for your call.
No worries.
Appreciate it.
Thanks.
We're now speaking to, is it Olivia?
Yeah, it is Olivia. Hi.
Hello.
I just wanted to, I'm not personally offended by it, but on the offensive kind of thing, in New Zealand we have Eskimo pies and we also have Eskimo lollies. Wait, sorry about that noise.
Eskimo lollies?
Yeah, that look like Eskimo Inuit people.
Oh, really? So they're little soft juby things, are they? Sort of like one of those strawberries and creams, about that size,
yeah,
are they?
Yep.
But they're decked out in parkas or something, are they?
Yeah, with a little hood, and they come in kind of a range of pastel colours, and they're sold at your local dairy.
I see. So I've never... do the Eskimo people find these confectionaries offensive?
The Inuit people, I think... apparently do find it offensive. One was just in the paper the other day in New Zealand. She was in Timaru and found one in her shop. But she only found a lolly. I would hate to think what she would have thought when she found the Eskimo pie.
So would one step towards reconciliation be retitling them Inuit pie? I mean, would that be a small gesture, you think?
Yeah, well, yeah. They're not great anyway. The Eskimo pie is quite nice.
I do love the Eskimo. See, the problem is, now that I realise it's offensive, I feel bad, but I do love the Eskimo pie.
Yeah, that's
pie.
Right.
It's very good.
It's kind of... it's fair. I mean, the Buffalo Bill looks like Ivan Milat when you think about it. And I highly recommend people to search on the internet Buffalo Bill and Ivan Milat for the webpage that first spotted this. And they are dead ringers. And so I find it difficult to have a Buffalo Bill nowadays, not just because it's inedible bubblegum, but also because it reminds me of bad times.
Ivan Milat. I often confuse Chad Morgan and Ivan Milat.
Really?
In fact, I call Ivan the anti-Chad. That's just my...
Olivia,
personal.
We've drifted off from your very serious and good point.
No, it wasn't serious. Well, it is serious for the Inuit people, but yeah.
That's right. I will be saying Inuit from now on. I'm sorry about
that. You're Inuit sweet.
Now, I'm going to speak to Catherine, I hope. Is she still there? Hello?
Yes, I'm here.
How are you?
Hi, I'm well, thanks. Just going back to the N-word, I was just going to tell you a little story about when I was recently out with my mother, my elderly mother, shopping in a big department store, and we were wandering around looking at various bits and pieces of clothing, and there was a pair of trousers she was looking at, which were a brownie colour, and she said quite loudly, "I wonder what you call that colour. I suppose you call it nigger."
Oh dear.
And I just sort of thought, well, I'll just steer her away from these trousers now, we'll go over to something else different coloured, thinking, well, no one heard that, I think we've got away with it.
Well, her life's changed. She now doesn't have that colour of trousers because of what she inadvertently and didn't know what she was saying, I presume.
No, and she still doesn't because, there's, you know, I thought, anyway, she then repeated it a bit louder.
Did you give her a lesson?
I just dragged her away and said, "Mum, you cannot say that. Cannot say that." But you know, so my point was, I guess, that for her generation, it, like the nigger coon stand, it's you know, that's what they were called.
It was just part of the way people spoke in those days. I mean, I have a relative, an older relative, and he's a lovely man. But whenever he's referring to the local Chinese restaurant, he says, "I'm going to pop down to Charlie Chewy." That's what he says, and he's not meaning to be offensive. It was the dumb thing in the 1940s.
Yeah. Well, I was quite interested to know that it was actually a colour once, you know, a clothing colour.
There you go. Well,
check this out,
just Tone. Torp.
Our next caller is going to maybe tie in just even with his name.
Yes.
Choco, are you there?
Yeah, how are you going?
How are you?
Not too bad. The reference to Choco is the conscripts for the Second World War. Were you aware that they were nicknamed Chocos?
No.
And the reason for that was actually not a racist term at all. It was to do with them being pretend soldiers, as in chocolate soldiers.
Oh, okay. So it was like that famous quote of Arthur Caldwell's about two wrongs not making a white.
Yes, indeed. That was actually
a pun.
Prime Minister at the time, which was a double whammy.
Yeah, that wasn't good. It wasn't good.
But anyway, the Choco was suggesting that they weren't real soldiers and that they melted under fire.
Right, okay. So it was...
And their credos came when they were actually called the Home Guard before they... that was a, you know, technical term. And they were responsible for holding the Kokoda Trail with the Fuzzy Wuzzy.
Yeah, I was going to ask, have you got a similarly good explanation for how we came up with Fuzzy Wuzzy?
Yeah,
out of jail limit, card there?
In any case, that was curious. But up in that area of the world, I lived in Indonesia for some time, and up until recently you could buy toothpaste called Darky Toothpaste.
There you go.
And it had blackface... Negro, if I can use that word, on the cover. And furthermore, in Australia, we used to have Lucky Boy licorice, which before that was called Nigger Boy licorice.
Right. I always enjoy, and sorry for the if you've just tuned there is a reason for us talking about this, but I always enjoy hearing two particular people of who aren't from my cultural background, slagging each other off. I was recently in a Indian carpet shop.
Yes.
And I heard one of the blokes came back from lunch at like 4 o'clock, and it was at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. This guy had just come back from lunch, and literally one of the Indian bloke goes, "So you've been having a Greek lunch?" And I've no idea what that means.
Ah, write that in my notebook. The Indians give it to the Greeks.
Give it to the Greeks. I didn't know that. I don't even know what a Greek lunch is.
Choco, thank you for the call.
And just one bit of very bad taste.
Yes.
When we're talking about confectionery, as a kid, you used to be able to buy aniseed rings. And the kids in primary school used to call them Avo's assholes.
Oh, well, there you go. Yeah, that is poorly advised. They were just poorly advised.
That's right.
And we're certainly not condoning that sort of behaviour.
Absolutely not.
No. Hey, I've got 5 callers here, which we are going to get to after play a couple of sponsorships. Mm. And maybe I'll play a very short track as well. I'm sorry to those 5 people that are holding.
I have a very short track queued up, Mr. Wilson.
Excellent. So, stick with us, and those people on hold, you've done a great job already. Just a couple of sponsorship announcements there. And we do have on the line, we have David, Michael, Andrew, Ross and Lisa. We're going to get to them.
Yes.
Then we're going to play a track, and then we're going to take calls up till 11:45. But don't call maybe unless you're happy to wait through a track in this little pits patch here. So let's go first to David on line 1.
Good morning.
Hey, David.
Good morning. Tony Wilson, where are you getting your Bubble O bills from?
I saw one the other day at the local service station, which is on the corner of Heidelberg Road and Victoria Road. They had a Bubble O bill recently.
Really?
You don't think they look mulattish?
Wow. I can see the resemblance, but I was just... me and my girlfriend one day had a nostalgic ice cream day where we hunted down, you know, Gay Times and Spices.
Monaco Bar?
Sunny Boys.
What a great idea.
Frosty Fruits.
Did you notice that they were called Monaco Bars? I remember them being called Monaco Bars, but really no one calls the place... No one called them Monaco Bars, did they?
No. No, that would be embarrassing.
Monaco Bar. But I'd be truly interested to find out that they're still making... Because we came up empty-handed on the Buffalo Bill. It was the prize that we wanted.
I think they're back right... How long ago was your day?
6 months ago.
I reckon I've seen them in the last 2 weeks. I couldn't believe it.
They might be seasonal revivals of obscure ice creams. I think they maybe bring them back into production once in a while and... Just temporarily.
Frankston listeners, I've got some good news. I think it was at the end of the Frankston Freeway, just where you get to that first set of lights, and you can sort of see a JB just off to the left, luring the likes of Tony Martin with its waft.
Yeah, sure.
Well, if you go into the service station just before that, I believe there are Bubble O bills.
You know, I'm very impressed by Tony Biggs generally, but he's never really tackled the Bubble O bill issue.
Speaking of offensive candy, didn't they rename Fags?
Oh.
Yeah, Fads.
Yeah, they Fads.
But I don't think it was to do with homosexual reference.
It was to do with the smoking.
Yeah, it was actually trying to... They were trying to not encourage kids to smoke.
It's still confectionery cigarettes.
You wouldn't not be making it look like a cigarette be the first thing.
They got rid of the little red thing on the end, too.
Oh, that's just foolish.
Well, I mean, fags in general is a word that's really, you know, on the way out. I mean, I think people used to call their cigarettes their fags. Like, give me a pack of fags.
Yeah.
And there's an epithet that's on the way out, too. For more modern variations, it's just not something you see much anymore, is it?
It's certainly in that public school sense, it doesn't get used as much as it used to in Tom Brown's school days either.
So
it's an interesting... I wonder if it's interesting to think that there's someone in at British American Tobacco who would have had to write a memo to the executives on what's going on with fags. That would have been an interesting thing for them, because they're definitely trying to hook you early with fags onto the real stuff. And someone would have had to write about the government regulation.
I'm just glad they
got... To get rid of the little red tip on fags.
I'm glad they got rid of those lolly syringes they were selling when I was a kid. They were foolish.
Yeah. We've got Ross. Hello, Ross.
Good morning.
How are you?
Sorry, not too bad, thanks. I hate to lower the tone, but I can talk a bit of Bert Newton regarding offensive. And it's that lovely show 20 to 1.
Oh, yeah.
Which in itself, horrendously offensive.
Sure.
But I had one of their things one night, and I have to confess, I subjected myself to this, so I only have myself to blame. But they were doing dummy spits, so your McEnroes, your Tom Cruises, that sort of jazz. And they got to, they suddenly just flashed to this German kid from a YouTube footage, just having a massive tantrum at his computer not working. And he was absolutely going ballistic in, and when it goes back to Bert, he just sort of pauses, looks at the camera and says, looks like he's about to invade Poland. And I was speechless. That is... I'm not Jewish, but I was, or Polish. I'm not speechless, but I was like, wow.
Oh, well.
That's
well,
incredible.
Ross, that is amazing. I don't know. I just saw Tony Martin sitting there huffing into his microphone. Because, of course, you did do some 20 to 1
records. I have to confess, I have been on 20 to 1, but I only did it in order to get Bert Newton to come on my radio show. That was the price I had to pay. But you go in and you sit there for half an hour, and they film you for half an hour, and then it's on for years. Like, yeah. They use the footage in about 20 episodes.
And yeah. At no certain time. There's no fixed time to that show.
No, thank God.
It's just on.
Yeah.
All right. Well, sorry about that. Who's invading Poland next?
Thank you, Ross. We've got Andrew. Hello, Andrew. Hello. Oh, Andrew couldn't stick it out.
She was offended by the Poland reference.
Lisa Mayev. You there, Lisa?
No, Lisa equally unhappy with and Germanic humour.
And then let's just roll the dice here on that flashing light. Who are we speaking to here? Hello?
This is Michael, lads.
Hey, Michael!
Hello, Michael, are you offended?
Quite frequently, but not by you, bloke. I've got the LennyHenry.com site up here. I can confirm your suspicions.
So he was in the Black and White Minstrel show.
Yeah, he's got a bit to say about it. He did an 8-week stint and then followed some summer seasons up, and this is from 1977 to 1979.
Right.
He talks about having won a New Faces and was delighted to get a gig anywhere by the sounds of it. He finishes off saying he took part in jokes because I didn't really know any better. It hurts thinking about it now. I think the term ill-advised could be bandied about here.
Right. Yeah, well.
Does it say whether he... white-faced in order to black-face, which is the...
One of the jokes that they started making was he's the only one who doesn't need makeup.
Right.
Oh, dear.
I looked for that detail, but it might be in another chat site somewhere, but I couldn't find it there.
Well, Michael, thank you for clearing that up.
Can I add something else if you've got a moment?
Yes.
Yeah.
You recall, of course, that Hey Hey used to... I can't remember the country they had instead of telling Irish jokes.
Oh, did they invent a fictional country?
Bitalonia or something?
Oh, Bitalonia.
But anyway, that's not really my point. But for those of you that have been to Ireland, you might know that in Ireland they actually tell Kerry Man jokes, the same ones.
Kerry Man?
Really?
Yeah, they pick on the people from Kerry, so sorry for the people out in Kerry there. But...
And then in America, it's Polacks.
Polish.
Oh, stupid Polacks.
And they have a go at the Newfies in Canada. They're hanging off the side with sort of Scottish accents.
Maybe the way to settle this is...
The Newfoundland people got a slightly Irish accent, isn't it?
Maybe if we just have an international decision to convert all racist jokes to be about Switzerland. Choose a neutral country. Yeah. Go the Swiss.
Yeah. I won't join in there, but, you know, good luck.
Okay.
The Tasmanians just don't let go of the King Islanders.
No.
Hammered. We've got a track. We've got a track.
Yes.
Exciting. Oh, we haven't got a track. Hang on. We've got one more call.
We've got Jenny.
I'll slip away.
Yep. Thank you, sir.
Sorry, Michael. We should have given you a bigger farewell than that.
Goodbye.
And it's Jenny. Hello.
Hi. How are you? Good morning.
Good morning.
Something offending you?
I'm not ringing up in particular for anything that really offends me, because it's quite interesting, isn't it, where they have a range of emotions, but... Fags. I always use the word fags, and I love it. So it's not dead in my world.
For cigarettes, are they your cigarettes normally that you're referring to?
Yeah. Well, to be honest, I have just given up, but I've smoked for 30 years, and I love saying, "Who wants? You know, I'm popping out for a fag, or I need a fag, or have you got a fag,
or a filthy fag." Do you ever call? I know a friend, Susie Morris Ashton, here at the station, always says, "I'm just going outside for a filthy fag."
Oh, filthy puts another spin on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But and can I ask, as a just given up smoker, you know how the things that there are references where your brain will tell you to have one right now, sort of thing. When we talked about fads, the white sticks of confectionery, would that make you want to have a cigarette, someone talking about that?
I get very strong urges all the time at very odd times, and I was a great fan of fags as well when they, you know, I was around when they were fags and did have red tips. I'm sure I loved them.
And if someone was smoking in a...
like all the time.
If someone was smoking in a movie, you know how they've tried to limit that and said that it's dangerous and it makes people want to smoke, but would you want to have a cigarette now if you saw, Humphrey Bogart floating down a river with the...
Yeah, I love smoking, and I love any time, anywhere.
But that a specific trigger like that would make you think about it.
Look, I have to remind myself I have given up all the time.
Are you watching the series Mad Men on SBS?
No.
Give it another 6 months.
My life's a little out of control and I can't seem to get to any television I want to see.
Jenny, thank you for your observations.
Cheers. Have a great day.
Same to you.
Bye.
Now, we have got a track.
We are going to have some Root, a fine Australian band. They get a fair run here on Triple R, so I've chosen a slightly obscure Root number. This is from the Get Up Yourself EP. It's called I Wear My Prescription Sunglasses at Night. Here's Root.
Somebody new, the pretty boys are too shallow for you. Someone clever and interesting, well that means me. Who are you kidding? I'm the one that you want, but I'm not the one that you want. Yes, I'm funny and I'm different and smart. I turn conversation into art. What you get is lots more than what you see, which is why you won't be going home with me. I'm the one that you want, but I'm not the one that you want. I'm the one that you want, 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 the one that you want. Yes indeed, but I'm not the one that you want. Perception is reality when you're stupid.
But don't look into my eyes, you might like what you find. But don't look into my eyes, you might like what you find.
But don't look into my eyes, my lethal weapon's my mind.
I wouldn't wanna give you a fright.
I wear my prescription sunglasses at night.
That's a sudden ending, pardon me. That's Root from the EP Get Up Yourself. And I'd just like to mention, Root are playing the Theatre Royal in Castlemaine tomorrow night, Saturday night. Great show, goes off. I've spoken recently to DC Root, and there is a new album called Surface Paradise coming out, I think possibly July, August. And it's threatening to be a concept album.
You and DC Root have collaborated on stage before, haven't you?
Very briefly at the ESPY, yeah, shortly after my controversial sacking. I got up and had a bit of a bitter screed at the front of a Root gig. And I feel, you know, because DC's very into that. If you want to have a rant about something, he's on for it.
How does that, how are things going on that front, you and Oz Stereo? Do you kind of...
It's funny because I've been in on some of their other shows, not on the station I was on, but on the sister station. So, I mean, I'm still allowed into the building, but, yeah, we're generally not speaking.
Nah. Well, it is a tragedy. Sometimes you just see, I don't know, of course, Triple R listeners don't ever deviate off the dial.
And I'm sorry to even bring this up on Triple R.
A lot of them would have found Get This just as a podcast.
Well, that's right. The podcast had all the ads and music cut out. So we did actually, a lot of Triple R people used to download the Get This podcast.
Absolutely. And I saw a story yesterday, which I just thought, oh my God, it's hitting about 40 podcast trigger points. It had Rex Hunt and Assault in the same headline.
It's still before the court, so we have to be careful what we say, but yes, media personality Rex Hunt broke the finger of a cyclist when he twisted his hand in a road rage attack.
Allegedly,
a Melbourne court has heard. Hunt, a former policeman, I keep forgetting that.
Yeah, well, that's where you learn to break fingers, to be honest. Let's not defame Rex.
No.
Let's defame the entire Victorian police force. That sounds like that sounds like an awful incident.
It does sound like an awful incident. I'm just trying to think what we can say about it.
Not much. Other than that the address to the Nation, which talks about thugs in the scallop industry.
Right.
You just get the feeling that Hunt v. Thugs in the scallop industry is becoming a much more interesting cage fight than you initially thought.
Well, that was a quote from his famous address to the Nation, which went out on 3AW a few years ago and which is doing the rounds. It's like a very an often swapped file.
Yeah, and it's and he has a vision for Australia in that, and the breaking of fingers isn't in it, really.
No, that's right. But, yeah, and that's where the famous quote, "This is dizzy stuff," comes from.
Yeah.
And a lot of people have been making their own "This is dizzy stuff" merchandise. So, I know, people often send things to me with "This is dizzy stuff" written on it.
Yeah.
So, yeah. If you say that we shouldn't defame the Victorian police... Do you want me? I can do that briefly if you'd like.
Yeah.
Tell you a story I heard recently. Now, this may be made up, but someone told me that in the 1990s, a common... You know how you hear about the phone books?
Yeah.
You know, I don't quite understand how that works. So you hit someone with a phone book...
No bruises,
but it's very painful, right?
I think so, yeah.
Apparently, allegedly, one trick that the Victoria Police used to use in the 90s was they'd be questioning a suspect and getting nowhere. Suddenly, the door would open and a nude policeman would appear, clutching an enormous fish, like a 3-foot-long fish, would come in and just start bashing the suspect around the head with the fish. Why would they do that? Because in court, how's that going to sound? I was being questioned, suddenly a naked cop came in, started hitting me with a fish. Yeah, right!
And you're guilty of everything as well, because you're clearly taking the piss.
That's taking the piss. Get out. But someone told me that was a true story, that the nude cop with fish technique was one no longer used, I'd like to point that out,
in
a previous era, the 90s.
Yeah. I've been a fish transgressor myself.
Really?
Last day of year 12, dress-up day.
Yeah.
Dressed up as a polar bear. My nickname was Polar. Not because I was bipolar or from Antarctica or Arctica.
Yeah.
I had very hairy legs and white hair.
Oh, as right.
So
your nickname was Polar.
As in polar bear.
So you could have been Tony Polar, the famous singer from Valley of the Dolls.
Thank you.
There you go. Well, sorry.
I could have been, but we weren't that well read at the time, or we hadn't seen the play. And so I dressed up on the last day with... Mum still helping me with dress-ups even to this day. sewed my old baby lammy across a set of white pyjamas. So I've got a lammy kind of down the front. Then I bought a plastic mask of a polar bear.
Wow, so you've taken it up to them.
Yeah, and then I've brought in a rod, a piece of doweling with a string on it. And then I went down to the butcher and got the 13-pound cod.
And how did this go down?
Well, it just was a really hot day, and so I stank out every class I was in for the entire day. And eventually they said, we'd like you to take that fish out of here. We don't even care if you go home. And so I was sent home from muck-up day. Following on, the previous year there'd been someone sent home from muck-up day. And he came to school dressed as Rambo with live ammunition.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so wow. He and I are the only two to ever go, I always think.
And did that diffuse the Polar nickname? Was that a full stop to
it? I didn't keep Polar beyond school. Mm. I only got during my football days, I got Jaime, because I don't have much of a knee lift. And you'd know from the Get Smart episode where Jaime runs in the Olympics.
He's got a robotic knee.
He's got a very low robotic knee lift. So the Paran boys came up with Jaime, which wasn't bad.
Right.
And then my last nickname, and most recent, and the one that stuck more than any other, is that I used to, at the end of news bulletins here at Triple R, give Hollywood news where I clearly wasn't on top of even who the celebrities were,
really?
Let alone what they were doing. And so I picked up the moniker Tinseltone.
Wow, you've got a lot of nicknames.
So I'm tinsel to a few people.
Is that right?
Yeah.
See, you would think, looking as I do, that I would have just attracted millions of nicknames. I'm like someone who's walked through a minefield and never stepped on a mine. I don't think I've ever had a nickname. I didn't have one at school. And Russell Gilbert, who we mentioned earlier, he was so baffled by this that somebody could have gone through their entire life
without a nickname.
Without a nickname. And he thought, oh, I'll come up with one. And his one was T. Martin. And so a lot of people will call me T. Martin. That's not even really a nickname. That's just an initial.
Yeah.
That's
well,
it.
I haven't got one for you. I mean, there's lookalikes for you. A lot of people
I get a lot of lookalikes.
Yeah.
The guy from the Dummies books.
But it's long for just guy from Dummies books. If he was called Waldo, I mean, there's Where's Wally as well. But
well, that's confused because of the Waldo thing. And,
yeah. And it also doesn't really work because Wally is a kind of
a nickname.
Either a term of affection or a term of a derogatory. Just it's got too loaded, Wally.
No.
You couldn't have a Wally with water. It would say too much other than Where's Wally.
I tell you what, people have been yelling at me in the street a lot lately is, "Where's your cape?" Because it was April, and on my old show we did a thing called Caperl, which was encouraging people to wear a cape to work during April, and that was 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And I was amazed how this, in 2009, people of their own volition have been celebrating Caperl. And everywhere I went in the comedy festival, people in capes would be going, "Mate, where's your cape?"
I got a cape. I picked one up from Get This. And, of course, we're into one of my favourites of your alternatively named months from that show, which is Dismay.
Was that one of ours?
Yeah.
I remember we used to, always on our show, there was a radio station that celebrated Rocktober. Would that have been 3XY or someone? And we always used to beat them to the punch by celebrating Rocktember. Just get in early.
Well, this is an anecdote that anyone who listened to the Breakfasters are currently reciting just before I say it, given that how many times I've said it. But I was at Minter Ellison, a law firm, for a couple of years, and didn't really have many career highlights there.
Right.
But by the end of October 1997, I figured I was coming into my swan song and that my legacy at this place should be to get a legal letter out of this very prestigious firm with beautiful letterhead and a great reputation that's dated something Rocktober 1997.
Right.
So I got all the way to the 27th of Rocktober before I... And you had to have every piece of mail signed out of there. I wasn't.
Right.
So I had to... I chose the matter, said this isn't that big. I won't get in too much trouble. I won't be hauled before the Law Institute if I do Rocktober on this matter. And so I chose my matter late in the month, went in, busy day for the partner, shoved it in front of his face. He was signing before he'd even...
Wow.
But it was an auto-generated date, so... You had to go in. There was not even like I could have missed. I said, "Oh God, how have I written Rocktober instead of October?" it generated itself, so it clearly had been tampered with. And what I hoped for was a response, because legal letters begin, "We refer to your letter dated."
Yeah, right.
So,
23rd of Rocktober.
So, I just wish whoever received it had have had the feel of "We refer to your letter dated 27 October 1997.
I'd like to think that a whole carefully prepared case fell over because of the Rocktober codicil.
Unbelievable. Well, I've got a track, and it's almost current. Well, it's not a current track, of course, but it's current in the sense that the Flaming Lips are coming here.
Oh, are they?
In July, and I can't remember what your listeners came up with for an alternative name for July, but in July the Flaming Lips will be here, and I've got a Flaming Lips track. This one is Yoshimi, Battles of Pink Robots.
On the Blower with Tony Biggs on Triple R.
Gee, that sounds good, doesn't it?
Charming, Biggsy. And we are Two Tones filling in for Tony Biggs, Tony Wilson and Tony Martin. Been with you since 9 a.m. this morning. Unfortunately, Biggsy hasn't been, and not well this week, Biggsy.
No,
I know you've probably had better weeks, and so our best wishes go out to you.
I'd like to think that in honour of Biggsy, we're talking about the Dam Busters, the new version, and how Sir David Frost thinks if they call the dog Niggsy, that'll be like not as offensive as the N-word. Maybe call him Biggsy.
Yeah, call him Biggsy. I think that B at the front won't lip sync too. That'll work okay, won't it?
No, that'll work fine.
Yeah, well, we've had a good 3 hours. Have you got anything coming up?
Well, I personally don't, but I'd like to plug a new comedy venue here in Melbourne. Always good to see a new comedy night happening. And there's one down in Hampton, the Hampton RSL, tonight, every Friday night from 8:30, Comedy Impro with some of the old school comics, people from my generation, Tim Smith, Andrew Goodwin, Matt Quatermain, Simon Rogers, and special guests at the Hampton RSL, where, of course, the beers are at proper RSL prices.
Under 250? Under 350.
It's very, very reasonable. And
Schooners?
I think possibly, yeah. It's
It's quite odd. The RSLs are really a New South Wales. Yeah. No, I think the Victorian RSL might have a word to me on this, actually. No, but I really do associate RSL clubs with New South Wales, where you're right. often just forced into them by complete lack of other options to
well,
drink.
I think, I'm not sure what's going on in Hampton, because it's Tim Smith's local, and he's sort of, I don't know if the RSL needs a shot in the arm, and maybe comedy's the answer, but I think quite a few of the licensed venues have closed down there, so the RSL might be the only place you can get a brewski.
If you get to Marimbula RSL, yeah. it's one of the few places on earth where you can have fights about whether or not you should be allowed in with elastic-sided boots. It's like, really? That's sort of the other place to go is the MCC members if you're looking for that fight. But yeah, it's certainly a great feeling to have shoes that are worth more than $100 and to be watching people with $8 sneakers
slide by,
flying past you because they have shoelaces.
I would also like to plug a fine book for the younger reader, which is The Princess and the Packet of Frozen Peas by one Tony Wilson.
Yeah, I've had a pipeline of kids' books that have been lined up that just been yeah. dropping off each year for the last 5 years, and I've actually run out.
Oh,
there's
really?
Nothing stuck up there anymore. And so now this one just plopped into existence, I think, a month ago.
All right.
And it's my first internet. It's my international debut.
Oh, it's come out overseas.
Came out in the UK.
Did they have to change the language at all? No?
Well, I don't think so. It's an adaptation of the old Hans Christian Andersen story.
Right.
You remember in the original that the princess...
Oh, can't sleep because...
Because of a pee under 20 mattresses and eiderdowns. Right. And I... got a thinking and figured that if she complained then, really the future of the marriage was going to be full of a fair bit of complaining. And so I basically wrote a story about the brother of the prince in The Princess and the Pea.
Right.
He is now looking for his wife, and he asks his brother for advice. He says, find a sensitive, I use this test to find a sensitive princess. He goes around, finds out that really she's pretty damn annoying.
Right.
So he sets up his own test involving a camping blanket and a pack of frozen peas. So it really will. It threatens to start up a big Hans Christian Andersen revisionist society.
And there's nothing offensive in there for the young folk? No racial epithets?
No, it's a pretty easy, brisk read with beautiful illustrations by Sue DeGennaro.
And are you out on the trail?
Not really. I am doing a reading, though. No launch this time because I figured I've had a few recently and people aren't up for too many gigs in a year.
Right.
So we're going to do a reading. We're going to the Little Book Room in North Carlton. It's in Nicholson Street, North Carlton, in those main North Carlton shops just near the Empress Hotel. Mm. And I am doing a reading at 2:30 p.m. on Saturday, the 23rd of May.
And that's for the younger folk, obviously.
Yeah, they'll enjoy it.
And maybe then the kids could be sent out and the adults could stay for some of the fruitier passages from your new novel.
Yeah, we could do that. But that's a while off. And hang around for Nest of Occasionals October through the very churched up, not Pan Macmillan, the big stuff for
yeah,
you this
Picador.
Time.
Yeah, Picador. That's right. It's highfalutin.
It is. Now, again, a big get well to Tony Biggs. We've very much enjoyed subbing for you, mate. And we'll hopefully be hearing you on the airwaves soon. Coming up next, as always, on a Friday at midday, we've got NEO Styles and Stylin.
Yes.
But first, I think there's a
news. Now
what
you must do, you must contribute, and mightily so. 102.7.